Welcome back to Better Than I Found It, the podcast all things college golf. You're listening to Mike McGraw, the men's golf coach at Baylor University. My guest today on Better Than I Found It is one of the really terrific coaches in women's college golf, Kaylin Anderson of the University of South Carolina. Now in her 17th year at South Carolina, her teams have won a total of 24 tournaments, including five regional titles. They've advanced to the NCAA championship on 12 occasions and finished in the top five three times. She played her own college golf at Duke for legendary Hall of Fame golf coach Dan Brooks, and she was even an All-American her senior year. I've always said successful programs aren't built by accident. You'll see exactly why after listening to Kaylin's interview. I hope you enjoy. Okay, let's all welcome my very special guest today on Better Than I Found It, South Carolina women's coach, Kaylin Anderson. Kaylin, I appreciate you giving me some time to chat this morning.
So excited to be here. Thanks, Coach McGraw.
Absolutely. You know, you and I don't really know each other. I know we've met at a convention, but I was talking to Jay Goble, our women's coach here at Baylor recently, and I said, you know, I've been trying to get more women's coaches on here, and we had Melissa Llewellyn, we've had Lindsey Kuhl, we've had, you know, quite a few, but I want more. And I said, pick one that you think would be somebody I need to interview. And Jay said, well, Kaylin Anderson. And I said, okay. And so I started looking up and I realized I knew who you were, but also I just wasn't aware of all the success you've had. So I'm thankful to Jay that he kind of sent me your direction. I'm looking forward to this.
Well, I appreciate it. Jay's a good friend of mine. So I'm happy to be here and talk a little golf. So
let's do it. You know, we're recording this in the last week in January, so we both know what's getting ready to happen, the spring season. I'm thankful for it. I have a great amount of gratitude for the job I have, but wow, the spring seasons get going crazy, don't they?
Oh, they do. We're about to head out to California for a couple of weeks and finishing up some qualifiers, and it's an exciting time. We're about to hit it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's here. So just tell me a little bit about your team and basically an outline of your schedule this spring.
Absolutely. So we're a highly international group. We've got, and we're a young group. So we're going to have this core group. I think we finished the fall ranked sixth in the country. And we've got three juniors, a sophomore and two freshmen, three sophomores and a freshman. So we're a young group. We're gonna return everybody the next year. We have two Americans, two from South Carolina, and the other five are all international. So we've got a good mix. And our spring schedule, we're gonna start out in California at Palos Verdes in LA, and then head down to San Diego States events. Gives ourselves a look out in California, hopefully before the national championship, and then be on in the Southeast kind of the rest of the semester. So we'll then head over to our event at the Darius Rucker in Hilton Head, over to Augusta's event. Then we're gonna host another event at a great golf course, new golf course called Old Barnwell in Aiken, South Carolina, right before the Augusta Women's Am. We're gonna have a couple players in that, and then head over to our SEC championship in Florida, and then head into the rest of the postseason.
That's great. Wow. That's a nice schedule all over the country and at some great events. You mentioned the Darius Rucker. The tournament didn't exist the year I was the women's head coach at Oklahoma State. Kind of wish it would have. That would have been a great event. But Jay Goble has continually come back from that event every year. Keeps telling me how great it is. So you do a great job hosting. What makes the tournament special? Is Darius involved? Tell me about the Darius Rucker.
Darius is very involved. So we started that. I think we're in our 11th year, and we possibly could be in our 12th. So apologies, I don't know the exact year we started that, but it's a really special event. You know, we went the beginning of that. Really, the origination got with Puggy Blackman was our director of golf and our women's assistant coach years back, and His buddy, Bob Patton, down at Long Cove in Hilton Head, was he got with him and basically said, hey, we want to start one of the best women's events in college golf. You know, Puggy was obviously involved. I think you know Puggy probably pretty well, but you know, Puggy's like, there's just not anything that rivals anything on the men's side. We want to make an elite women's event. And I think we did a great job with that. But he got with Bob. He said, let's get a great golf venue. And then let's get Darius involved. And Darius obviously is an alumni of South Carolina. And we got Darius to do a concert for us. Darius comes in and does a concert the night of the practice round. He usually hangs out in the range, assuming he's not coming off a concert date tour, but you know, mingles with the girls, that kind of thing, does interviews with the Golf Channel. Definitely is there for the award ceremony, those kind of things. But he puts on an incredible concert for the sponsors, for the members, for the teams, the night before the tournament begins. And then you know, and then we play the event at Long Cove. But it's really the community there that at the Long Cove community that makes it so special. I mean, we get a ton of fans out there. We get a ton of the community at Long Cove, the membership come out. I mean, there's crowds out there, and I think that's really what makes it so special. The players and the teams stay at house on houses. And rental houses. Some of them are on the beach. It's just something a little different. Everything from the food to just the volunteers is top notch, and it's just a little bit different than your mainstream tournament. And I think it's you know, just a really special week for everybody. And the golf course itself, I don't know if you've been over to Long Cove, is just a first class
They
venue.
had a men's tournament there in the late or early 2000s, and my twin sister actually played the women's, I think, mid-am there several years, 10 or 15 years ago. But it's truly one of the, I mean, incredible gems that really nobody talks about that much. But what a great golf course.
And it's so great for the women. You get some, you know, it's tough in early March. Let me tell you, you get some really windy conditions whipping off the intercoastal. But you know, and I think it's just become really, really special and one of the elite fields, honestly, in college golf. And it's just really become a really fun week for everybody to gravitate around. And you know, Hilton Head's a small community, and you get a lot of people from the community coming in. And the nice thing is the whole island, the whole country club has really gotten around it. And it's just a really, really fun week. And obviously Darius really likes it. And just a few years ago, we've gotten Golf Channel involved, and I think it's the first full women's tournament that the Golf Channel has decided to televise. So that's been pretty special for us. And the growth of the event to showcase women's golf and how we've really grown that event has been very special. It's been a very special project for me and our program.
Yeah, congratulations on what you've done with that event. It's great to see women's golf, women's college golf on television, hopefully a lot more in the future. But so great spring ahead. I feel the same. I'm excited about it. But you know, you're not the typical collegiate golfer, collegiate coach that that played at a like a powerhouse. You're from Minnesota, which is a great golf state, by the way. There's some unbelievable golf in Minnesota, but it's also a northern climate where it's harder to develop a top tier game. So how were you able to do that? Because you were unheralded, under the radar. I wouldn't call you the number one recruit in the country when you came out.
Definitely not.
And yeah,
No.
but who, like, how did you get in the game? Who was your biggest influence?
Well, you know, I grew up, I would say my family, just my family in general. I mean, I loved both of my parents played golf. My dad played a ton. My mom played. You know, I grew up, you know, after school, my mom would take me out a lot. My dad loved the game. But my influence is my cousins. On my mom's side. My cousin Tim Herron played collegiate golf at New Mexico, actually for John Fields there in Texas. But he was at New Mexico at the time. And then my cousin Alyssa, on my mom's sister's kids, she also played college golf at Florida, I believe, for a year and then transferred over to Wisconsin. So I watched them kind of go through the ranks of Minnesota junior golf and then go on to play collegiate golf. And they're both about 5 to 8 years older than me. So they were kind of somebody I aspired and watched go into the college golf rankings and earn scholarships and those kind of things. I grew up playing a lot of sports, very athletic. You know, Minnesota was a short season, so we had to go do other things. But it was cold. But again, I had the opportunity to play a lot of junior golf throughout the state of Minnesota. But you know, and then play some national events, played in the, you know, US Girls Junior, the Western Juniors, traveled a little bit, but definitely wasn't the kid who played a ton of AJGA or traveled all over the nation and just loved the game and played when, you know, the short season that I could. And but it definitely was my aspiration to play in college and always wanted to play professional golf.
Wow. You know, you also said you had some family members, obviously, that were notable, if you will. But you also had a good friend on your high school golf team, Hillary Lunke, who ended up being a U.S. Women's Open champion. Tell me about her.
Yeah. So Hillary and I grew up playing when we were really young. And Hillary and I were high school teammates. And Hillary was got good really, really late. So Hillary and I played junior golf when we were very young. And Hillary was living in Arizona. Our dads were both in the insurance business in Minneapolis. And Hillary played on the boys team in Arizona and then decided she wanted to move back to Minneapolis and play on a girls team. And so we became high school teammates and best friends growing up. And then we became very competitive, but stayed best friends and went through the recruiting process together. And she, early on, I was a much better player, and self-admittedly, she will say it too. I was a much better player when we were very early teens, and then in high school, she just took a quantum leap over me. Excellent player, and was way more highly recruited than I was. So we were very competitive in the recruiting process, and recruited by a lot of the same schools. We were both recruited by Duke. She was recruited by Stanford. She ended up going to Stanford. And actually, fortunately, she went to Stanford, so I got to actually go to Duke on and have the opportunity to kind of take her scholarship. So it all worked out for me. But Hillary and I have been great friends. We've both learned a lot from each other. To watch her win the U.S. Open was extremely special. And what a great, you know, not much golf going on in Minnesota, but I'll tell you what, there's a few really great players. Kelly Kerwin played at Wake Forest in Minnesota. A few really good players come out of Minnesota that I got to play with, and you know, such a fun opportunity to kind of have your best friend to grow up and compete with, and both of us play collegiate golf and have successful collegiate golf careers.
Right. You mentioned Hillary in the recruiting process, and you guys went through a lot of the same experiences, but I know you're getting to Duke was a little unusual. Do you have something, a little story related to that? How Coach Dan Brooks, who's one of the greatest coaches in the history of collegiate athletics, period, his record is just amazing. How he got you there?
Right. So Dan's the winningest women's golf coach of all time. So that's actually a great story. And it's probably, I think you asked me coming into this, what's one of the best recruiting stories of all time? I think it has to do with me, actually, and my recruiting story with Coach Brooks. But so Dan, I think one of his best qualities is he's one of the most honest people I'll ever meet. But so I send him, this was back in the day when we had no, really didn't have email. We did things. We were sending, you know, this is 19, I was class of 1997. So we're sending, you know, letters back and forth still and just doing phone calls. There's no email. And we're sending the VHS tapes. So I send him a VHS tape, and I literally get a letter back from him that it is two lines that says, you know, thank you for your information, but our class of 1997 is full. Good, best wishes to you, Dan Brooks. I mean, you know, just this form letter. So I get that. Well, it's probably late August at this time, and you know, official visits are going on, that kind of thing. And I get a call from him, and he said, hey, you know, I reviewed your tape, and you know, I think we would like to bring you in on a visit, but we're bringing in three other players. And I just wanted you to be upfront that we're going to bring in three other players, and you're my fourth choice out of four players. And I said, well, I'll still come on a visit. Let's do it. I mean, it was Duke. It was a team and school I was really, really interested in. Well, those three other players, including Hillary Lunke, Stephanie Keever was one of them, and another one named Jessica Bilskis, who was very, very highly touted at the time. And again, I was a very under the radar kind of scrappy player. And those three all took a visit to Duke at the same time. I took one alone, and all three decided to go to Stanford. And so he missed out on all three, and I'm the only one left, essentially. So out of default, I end up going to Duke. So it's actually kind of a great recruiting story that I tell sometimes because I think nowadays players always want to be the number one kid and they want so much love. But at some times you can't always be the number one player, right? So I end up being his fourth choice and by default get the opportunity to go to Duke. But I stay patient and the beauty of it is at the end of my 4 years is I saved that recruiting letter, that kind of denial letter, and I framed it to him once I graduated, and I said thanks for a memorable 4 years, a national championship, and helping me become an All-American, and I signed it to him, and I framed it, and I gave it to him as kind of my senior gift, and I don't know if he leaves it in his office or what it is, but I kind of did it to poke at him a little bit. But we kind of have that relationship. But it meant a lot to me, you know, to kind of overcome. And that's kind of how my personality is too, is to, you know, it motivated me a little bit. But again, it's kind of a story for recruits too, is you got to be able to take advantage of opportunities when they're given to you. And it, just because you're not the number one now doesn't mean that you can't be the number one, you know, down the road. It's all a matter of timing and what you make of opportunities.
I think if you seize an opportunity, so yes, you're exactly right. You didn't know that that opportunity would exist. He told you up front, you're number four. So what are the odds of you really ending up at Duke? Probably not very good, but you
Yeah,
did.
not at all.
And when I look at your record, just looking at it year by year, you actually got better every single year and finally became an All-American. If you had one thing about you or your relationship with Coach Brooks, what's the greatest ingredient that allowed you to get to that finish line? As one part of an NCAA championship team, but two, an All-American.
Well, I mean, I think it's intrinsic motivation. I think it's hard work and intrinsic motivation and willing to grow and accept challenges. I mean, I think going somewhere, I think there's a couple things. I think knowing I was going somewhere where I wasn't going to be the best and putting myself in an environment where, hey, I know that I can play. I know that I can make the team. But I know that I'm going to challenge myself. I know that being around better players is going to help me grow, and that I'm going to have to step up my game just being in that environment. And so I knew that that was an environment that I wanted to create for myself, and that that's where I was going to get better. That was an important place for me to put myself in. And then two, just giving myself the opportunity is what resources are going to be around me in terms of coaching, facilities, support team. People are going to help me develop and grow. And that's the other thing. Can Coach Brooks help me get to that next level? You know, what is the support team around me from an academic standpoint, you know, training standpoint, from a mental standpoint, from a, you know, who are the people that are going to be around me to help me get better, and can they help me get better? And that was kind of my outlook on evaluating the situation.
Very good outlet. You know, not everybody comes out as this highly ranked player. But I know, I don't know about all of those players you mentioned there, but there were a ton of girls that were not as highly as recruited you. You narrowed that gap and you passed them because not all those girls were all Americans, right? So there's, it's not
Exactly. I
necessary.
mean, go ahead. No, I mean, we had Jenny Shassir Porn at the time, and then when I was there, then he recruited Candy Hanneman and Beth Bauer, who were both the number one and number two in the class. So I mean, even after I got there, the recruiting got better. I mean, and it was even a more difficult situation once I got there, and that's when we won the national championship. But I think you know, you just kind of have to, the once you get in that situation, you have to keep kind of raising your game once you got to raise your level once you're put in that situation. And that was kind of the neat part when I look back on it, is you're either going to kind of sink or swim in that situation.
Yeah, and if you have a dream of playing the LPGA Tour or the PGA Tour, whatever it is you have as a young kid growing up, you shouldn't be offended when the coach recruits great players. That's another resource he just gave you to try to get to your dream. And if you can't beat those players, you're probably not going to play professional golf anyway.
Exactly.
So, well, you mentioned earlier Coach Brooks' great quality was incredibly honest. Was there another quality you think that allowed him to sustain success over such a long period of time?
Yeah, I think one of his best qualities that I would say, and I think it fits perfectly kind of in that, honestly, in that Duke mentality is he's so good at managing personalities. His management, just personal management skills are so good. I mean, obviously, he knows the game of golf, and that's important. I mean, golf is one thing. You can look at that, but he's so good at managing people and managing personalities, and really getting that those different personalities to mesh in a sense. And you're looking at very highly motivated kind of perfectionist mentalities and personalities coming into Duke for the most part. And great players generally, especially when I started coaching with him, I noticed that because the program started getting better and better and better. So I was there as his assistant coach from 2006 to 2008, and at that point, really, he was getting a lot of the very elite recruits. So you're looking at, a lot of the top players in the nation, and that's really where I started to learn a lot from him about really how does he manage the best players and the egos and those kind of things, because suddenly you're going to have the number one or number two or number five player in the world, or in the nation, and managing those personalities with one another on a team. And it was he's so good at handling everybody's needs and personalities, and having it work together in a group. And I really learned a lot from that. And I think also his decision-making skills, he taught me a lot about being on a team and how essentially every decision you make has a consequence and sets a precedent for the future, and that you can't take that for granted, and to pay attention to every decision that you're making, and in a team setting, again, what you do now is going to be remembered not only a month down the road, but 3 years down the road. So pay attention to what precedent you're always setting.
Wow.
And I've really learned a lot from that.
That's great. I was a women's head coach at Oklahoma State 1 year, and I'll never forget this. They had a girl that was not ineligible, but she had something in class that she couldn't go to the tournament, and they only had six on the team to begin with, and the other girl was injured. He brought four girls to the Betsy Rawls in Austin and won the golf tournament with four. He didn't need a fifth one. That's when he was in a pretty good spot with great players, because those first four could bring it.
Yeah, I mean, they're good.
Oh man, it's wonderful. So, your success at South Carolina has, I mean, it's like been incredible. Great programs aren't built by accident. So I know you haven't done this by accident, but let me just go over a couple of highlights. I could go a little longer than this, but I'll just go to the highlights. You, in the last 17 years, your teams have won 24 titles. Five regional titles, which is fantastic. Been to the national championship, I think, 12 times. Three top five finishes at nationals. SEC Coach of the Year three times. 44 All-Americans by 15 different players, and 14 of those are first-team All-American. Three SEC Scholar Athletes of the Year, and one Elite 90 Award winner. I mean, that's just highlights right there. Plus 66 All-American scholars. You've done a lot in a program that hadn't been doing all those things before you got there. So, in your opinion, I know you don't like talking about yourself, but what's like the major contributing factors that have allowed you to have success at South Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the same thing that just the same mentality of just what I took, just trying to make myself a better player at Duke. I mean, it was, it's just creating a culture of excellence here and then holding people accountable to it. I think and getting people to buy into that. And if to me it was coming in here, creating different standards and creating that culture. It's a positive culture. Again, we do call it the culture of excellence. Creating those standards within our players and finding those players who want to be part of it. And once that's been created, it took a while to create and change. And then once you have the players within it who kind of live by that every day, you recruit players who want to be part of that and that want to be great. And then they come in and kind of live it every day. And then, I think it's just sort of just kind of bred itself, and then the players sell it. And I think, it's worked. And we have a great program. We've been very lucky. We've been, we I have a wonderful administration who supports me, who gives me the things I need for the most part. But again, the players have to buy into it and then sell it and do the work. And certainly, we need leaders by example within it. But again, you got to find the right kids who want to do the work and want to be part of what you're building and doing.
Well, you hear those buzzwords like culture, discipline, sacrifice. I mean, there's a lot of words that can be used, but you got to turn those words into real life action and actual tangible things. And if you're able to do that as a coach and build and take all of these kind of egos that are pretty high, if you want to be a great golfer, you have to have somewhat of an ego, right? You have to believe in yourself, but bringing all those egos together and doing it well. One of the greatest college golf coaches on the men's side of all times was Dave Williams. He won 16 national championships at Houston,
Wow.
albeit in a different era. There weren't as many competitive teams, but he didn't play golf. That's the amazing thing.
Yeah.
Mike Holder always told me at Oklahoma State that Dave Williams wasn't a golfer, but he understood people and he understood relationships and he understood personalities and he would mesh all those together. And he was successful if for no other reason than he was able to put five, incredibly egotistical human beings in the same van and go pull for
Yeah.
each other. So anyway, I applaud you for what you've been able to do just in the time you've been there. You plan on doing this for a while longer, don't you?
Oh, I do. Yeah, I do. If they'll keep me around here, people keep hiring me. Yeah, it's good.
Okay, well, you
I
can't.
love it. I love it. Yeah,
All right. Well,
it's a
you
lot
can't
of
stay
fun.
around there unless you can recruit. So
That's right.
it's the lifeblood. So talk to me about your recruiting secret sauce. Like what do you do? I know you have a highly international team, but what do you do that gets people to Columbia, South Carolina?
I mean, that's the thing. You got to sell the culture. I think we have, I think first of all, we have a beautiful golf facility. I mean, I think that helps. But in general, again, you have to sell our culture. And I think we have players, and this is what I say. I mean, obviously, we've had some success, which is nice. It's always easier to sell a product that's doing well, that's been successful. It draws attention. But at the end of the day, I think, when players are having a positive experience and they're growing and developing, that's going to sell itself. So again, we're growing our players as people. I think if you look at the data of our players, they are getting better. I think one of the things, I got better as a player every year. It's very important that our players are getting better every year, and for the most part, we have data that backs that up. Our players get better. We're going to give them a great schedule. That's one thing I sell is we're going to play really, I think, Golf Week. If you look at the Golf Week, strength of schedule, we play almost a top five schedule every year in terms of strength of schedule. So we're going to give them a great opportunity. We're going to give them an opportunity to contend for championships. And again, they're going to be in an environment where they're really well supported, and it's positive. And that's what, that's all we can ask. They're going to be well taken care of and have the opportunity to hopefully be in a culture of excellence where they're going to have the opportunity to become one of the best players in the world when they leave here. And get a great education, and they have a wonderful team around them, from not just their coaching staff and team members, but their support team. I mean, from our academics advisors to their strength coach to all the people in administration around them. You mentioned it before, it's the people.
All right, let's talk about the people. Your players, we don't have a job. You and I don't. We don't have a job unless we have people and we try to recruit and attract great people, at least that are coachable, that want to be in this environment, whatever culture you and I have created on our respective teams. But
I asked you before maybe to think about the most inspiring story that you've ever had with a player. And you said, well, there's been so many different types of things. But you mentioned that you might have two players you wanted to talk about. Can you highlight those?
Yeah, I've got a couple players. You know, you talk about people changing your culture and just people that represent or exemplify your culture. But you know, there's a couple inspiring stories. I think one of them, Ainhoa Olara from Spain was a pretty special one. She was here from believe it was 2000 and I might mess up on this one. 2000 and I'm going to check my notes here. 2014 to 2018, so it wasn't too long ago. But I recruited. I went all the way over to Mallorca, Spain. She's from San Sebastian, Spain, but recruited her, and then she happened to have a major academic issue. And I basically told her, we can't get you into school. We're, you know, I would maybe look somewhere else. And she said, I'm going to take a gap year. She goes, South Carolina is the only place I want to go. And I'm like, I know you can go anywhere right now. You know, you've got a lot of opportunities. I go, are you sure you want to wait a year? I want to wait a year. So she takes a gap year. She takes some college credits. I can't remember, but she enrolled and basically became a transfer. She enrolled in a junior college or something in Spain, takes the whole year, comes to South Carolina and never plays her freshman year, essentially.
Wow.
Doesn't play her whole freshman year, maybe plays one or two events as an individual. And I believe was like a 77 scoring average, then gets in the lineup, her sophomore year. Gets better by your senior year. She's a first team All-American with a 71 scoring average and is top 10 in the world by the time she leaves college. And then leaves college, and she's just one of those players that was just, again, very passionate. It exemplified our you know, what it meant to what college golf was all about. She wasn't a great student coming in, and then majored in international business and kind of struggled through it. Ended up not turning pro and now works for Deloitte over in Madrid and is doing great. Well, with her top 10 world ranking, she got into the ANWA. She hadn't played professional or she hadn't played golf, competitive golf for over a year, gets into the ANWA and was the only player that hadn't been, I think that wasn't even playing collegiate golf or playing competitive golf, and goes and makes the cut. I ended up counting for her, goes and makes the cut and finished top 10 in the ANWA after not competing for or playing golf or practicing at all. She was in the business world, but just a special kid with a great attitude. And always showed up, you know, with happy smile on her face, that kind of thing. Just kind of a neat story of somebody that overcame some adversity and just setting your mind to something they wanted to do and is successful in kind of everything she does and you know, doing great in everything she does and just a special player in our program.
Imagine the list is pretty short that includes a 77 average as a freshman and a first team All-American later.
Yeah, I mean, and then plays the ANWA after not competing, you know, for almost a year, and just tees it up, makes the cut and finishes top 10. It was just, the kid's just kind of special. So it was kind of a neat story. And then the other one was Mathilde Klass. She's French and she just graduated last year, but she was a highly touted recruit. One of the top players in France, and absolutely blew out her whole knee in a terrible accident in the gym. And basically had to rebuild her whole swing. I mean, she had a massive surgery and had some real mental demons as her left knee and really couldn't rotate onto her left side for about a year. And obviously there were some concerns there with falling through with the recruitment and the injury, and I stuck with her and she stuck with it and really battled. But again, same thing, you know, struggled a little bit her freshman year and the first couple of years and had dreams of really turning professional, and that had to change because of the injury, and then really overcame a lot and changed her outlook and went into finance and that kind of thing, and is now working and in business school over in Paris. But you know, was an All-American her senior year, and is now in, like I said, in business school. But won her first event, you know, actually at the Darius last year. But huge impact on our team from a team culture and leadership standpoint, and big impact, you know, on and off the golf course in our program. So, you know, it's just, we all have our thoughts and our dreams and our goals that change, but you can just make a huge impact on and off the golf course in a program.
Absolutely. And I think people who don't coach don't really understand how that's a huge victory. Both of those players that you just told stories about had dreams of playing professional golf, and neither one of them are now. They're in the business world, but because of the discipline, because of the sacrifices they made, because of the experiences they had in junior golf and then college golf, they're probably really good in the business world at what they do. And you get to use that as sort of a, not a selling point, but certainly a something like, wow, you know, this is the value of college golf. This is one of the things that gets overlooked. Everybody can look at the guy who, or girl who's the first team All-American, gets their tour card right out of college and wins a major. I mean, that doesn't happen very often, but when it does, you say, oh, that's it. No, but there's other successes.
Oh, 100%. And as you know, those players that play the massive leadership roles for your program and your culture are so critical to what we do in terms of our everyday, day-to-day life. In terms of our programs and our recruiting, it's those are the difference makers, and it means so much to the things we do every day. It's you know, they're irreplaceable, really.
Absolutely, they are. Well, listen, now I've got to ask a question that some coaches have been afraid of. This question, they haven't liked it, but I don't think you're going to shy away from it. If you were the commissioner of college golf, of women's college golf tomorrow, so really you get to go in there and make a decision that's going to change your sport for the better. What would that first decision you made, what would that be?
Well, that one's pretty easy. I would definitely go with the LPGA Tour University. I think it's awesome on the men's side. I think the women need it. I think it would keep some players in school a little bit longer and be an awesome thing for the women's side.
Have you heard some talk about it or not?
I have not heard much talk about it. I think we've looked into it to an extent, but I think it's something I would be very excited about, and a lot of players would be excited about. I think it's something we need to get really passionate about, and we need to get working on.
Well, and the beta test is it's working beautifully on the men's side. I don't know why it wouldn't work on the women's side. Women college golf programs are producing LPGA Tour players every year, and just as men are. And this would be a great transition. It's really the only sport where you don't have a transition piece from the amateur or collegiate aspect straight into the professional. And I think the PGA Tour U has been a success, but I think the LPGA Tour U would be great as well.
I totally agree. I think it would be it'd be amazing. I think we need to get with the LPGA on that and work out a piece on that. I think it would be tremendous.
Love it. Love it. Your best piece of advice you've ever received from an opposing coach. So somebody that's clawing and scraping and scratching, trying to beat you as badly as they can, and you're doing the same, but they gave you some advice. You go, wow, I'm glad I heard that. And I want to remember that. What would it be?
Oh man, I don't know. That's a tough one. You know, I've got a couple pieces of advice. One that I like Puggy Blackman always said to me, he goes, you can't win the Kentucky Derby with donkeys, which I always liked. I always laughed at that. That's what he was helping me do when I was trying to turn around the program. So we always tried to hit recruiting pretty hard, but you know, and Dan Brooks always told me that, you know, he was always good when I was his assistant, because, you know, we'd have some really cold days and some tough days. And he'd always tell me that he goes, you always have to, basically you have to endure. You can't ask the players to do things that we as coaches wouldn't do. So basically it's like, if it's cold or it's hard or if it's difficult, he goes, you need to endure it with them, because you can't ask them to do things you wouldn't do yourself, essentially. Mm-hmm. So He goes, basically, he says, if it's a nasty day out there, he goes, you better be out there with them. They better see you out there. He goes, you can't be sitting in the clubhouse, you know, drinking coffee. he goes, otherwise, he goes, that looks really bad. He goes, no. you gotta go deal with the elements with them. He goes, they appreciate that. And he goes, otherwise they're not going to respect, you know, and want to fight through the adversity. And that's something I really did respect and think that he's totally correct on. Otherwise they're not going to want to fight through it as bad if you're not out there with them.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. And as I get older, the arthritis kicks in. I have to put one more layer on every single winter than I had the winter before, because it's just like, but I'm going to be out there with him. I just won't be swinging a club with him.
Well, Well, the best is I see him drinking coffee in the at the halfway house more often than ever. And I have to give him a really hard time. I'm like, why? I go, you keep telling me this, but I see your butt in here drinking coffee. And he's like, well, you know. But
none of us are getting any younger.
I know he's. I gotta give it to him. He's getting old. It's fine. Gotta get. He gets a break every once in a while. He's got enough wins under his belt. He can sit inside.
Yeah, he's got about enough wins for three or four different college careers. So I think he's.
Yeah,
fine.
He's okay. I know.
He's fine. You know, a lot of people say the collegiate athletics as a whole, it has more challenges now, especially the next 5 to 10 years. Than we've ever had. I think that's true. There's no doubt we have a lot of things ahead of us that aren't great. But I want you to give me, here at the last of this interview, give me a reason why women's college golf is in a great place and a jumping off spot for the future.
I think there's more talent in women's golf than there ever has been. I mean, there's more power, there's more talent, it's in a better place than it's ever been. I mean, it's an exciting game. There's more length. I mean, I've never seen the game at a better place on the women's side than ever. And you know, I mean, these girls hit it extremely well, extremely far. And it's something to invest in right now. I think it's an exciting game to watch. Girls are really good.
They really, really are.
They're really good. I mean, it's, I mean, I know when I stopped playing professionally, and I knew the game kind of took a quantum leap over my head a little bit, but I mean, these girls, the way they strike it and the way they play is absolutely incredible. It kind of blows my mind sometimes when I watch them, you know, the way they strike the balls is absolutely incredible.
It's a lot of fun to watch people doing something really, really well, especially when you know how hard it is and how difficult it is that what they're trying to do.
Absolutely. So it's, they're special. They have a special talent. And I think, you know, I think it's an exciting game. And I think a lot of people can relate to it, especially, you know, especially amateur guys too. I mean, I think it's something, you know, that they can relate their games to, you know.
Yes,
it's a similar game.
It really is. It really is. Well, Kaylin, I want to thank you for spending, you know, 45 minutes to an hour with me today. And I want to congratulate you on an incredible career so far. And I firmly believe, and I read in your bio, you said you thought you could win a championship at South Carolina. And I just want to wish you the best of luck as you continue on that journey. And let's both have a great spring. What do you say?
Thank you. You as well. And have a good one, and wish you guys the best down there. And hopefully the weather's a little better in Texas. Ours is changing in the better too. So
absolutely.
Absolutely. Thank you for the time. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Thank you, Kaylin.